Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Mystics of Texas. We are today thrilled to be talking to Tim Freak, who, if you do not know, is a wonderful writer, a fantastic philosopher, and someone who we here have gotten great joy out of getting to know. Even though it's our first time to talk, I feel like I know him well. And so, Tim, thank you for joining us, and I really appreciate you being here with us.
It's a real pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Interested to see where the conversation goes.
Yes, me too. I've just recently took your online course, and I found it wonderful. I thought the couple of minute sections of it were perfect for today's audience of small attention spans.
And one of the things which I'm very aware of is that, I had this also in my book Soul Story, which is what that course is based on, was wanting to distill down the ideas almost like little droplets, so you could just go, look, think about this. And I often find it frustrating in books where there's lots of extra words and more than I need. And I just, what's the idea here? So what I try to do with everything, and I'll try to do it today, is like, what's the idea? And then you can actually spend time and contemplate it. And the clearer and the simpler I can get it, the happier I am.
I thought you did a fantastic job. It is really difficult for most people, including myself many times, to distill the thought process down in such a concise and articulate way that it can resonate with other people. Like, they get what you're saying. And that's a difficult proposition.
It really is difficult. I mean, you know, I've been doing it this morning before this conversation. You know, it's what I do. And it takes an awful long time before I get to the point where it feels like, ah, here it is, bam. And it's a great joy when I can get there, because then it feels like, ah, I can share this now. A thing which, you know, I'm setting myself up now for anyone listening to this to go, well, he didn't live up to that, did he? But one thing I felt early, you know, some 20 years ago, I guess, there was a moment where I changed from when I read books. If I didn't understand them, I assumed the fault was in me, that I wasn't smart enough, or this guy was just beyond me, or something. And at a certain point, that changed, and I thought, no, if they're not explaining it to me, they don't understand. I mean, unless it's, you know, quantum physics or mathematics or something you need a language for. If it's something which I should be able to understand, then the person hasn't understood it themselves. And the more we understand it ourselves, the more communicable it is, I think.
Yeah, that what you just said, it reminds me of a letter I believe Thomas Jefferson wrote to a friend, and basically telling him, I'm sorry for the long letter, I did not have time to make it short.
Beautiful. I love that line. I hadn't heard that before. That's exactly right.
I think it's fantastic.
That's a beautiful
line.
Well,
I went through your course and just found it so thought-provoking. And because one of the ideas is that consciousness is evolving. And I love how you said on your TED Talk at Berkeley, I believe it was, that it's interesting that we are now thinking about the Big Bang in which we came from. So we you know, I kind of slaughtered that a little bit, but it was the notion. And I think that is great, because it's so true. You know, we think about where we came from, and if the Big Bang is true, then we are actually part of the Big Bang examining itself.
It's an awesome thought, isn't it? And like you said, when you get it, when you actually get that, and a lot of the ideas which really move me are kind of obvious, but we miss them. Like the fact that I'm embedded in the universe. That, you know, there is no Tim and the universe. There's only ever the relationship between Tim and the universe for me, and Kevin and the universe for you. It's like, so we are the universe. And that sounds like a, you know, wow, a mystical, and it is. But also, it's completely obvious. It's like, well, what else could you be? You're something different to the universe. And when you get that we've arisen from it in this emergent process, and now we have this incredible vision, which we've had for 100 years, that the universe isn't a thing, it's a process, and that it's evolved from the very simplest things you can imagine to us having this conversation. That is something significant, isn't it? That it's worth taking a bit of time just going, wow, okay, what does that mean then?
I think it's fascinating because it was probably 3 or 4 months ago here at one of our gatherings where we're just talking about these sort of ideas was the idea that we are stardust and we are the universe, and somehow throughout the ages, humans seem, at least in Western, you know, from Europe to the United States, the West, seem to think that we are detached from the universe, detached from the Earth. When, to me, and in our conversations here, once you start thinking about it, how can we say that we're not the Earth? And the Earth is then the universe. We eat. Our bodies are fluid. We're constantly making anew. And sometimes that's hard for the minds of people to wrap themselves around.
It's certainly a very different idea if you're interested in spirituality, because the traditional idea in spirituality is that you exist, or you at least come from, outside the universe, that there is an eternal realm of some sort or a transcendental realm which you've fallen from into the universe, and that the universe is a type of illusion or a type of trap, and your soul is caught in it. Plato says the body is a tomb. I mean, that's really captures it. It's like you're stuck in this thing. It's Maya. It's, you know, and what it feels to me now, as someone who spent their whole life writing and exploring spiritual experience and philosophy, is I don't think that's right. I think that was a perfectly understandable way of seeing things in the past, but now we have new information. So they were all living in a static universe, but we're not. We're living in a moving universe. So this flow, what I call the time stream, this flow of experience we're all, you know, experiencing right now, that, well, let me just pause for a second, actually, just and share with you an idea which is really important to me now. It's come in since the course and since Soul Story, but it's based on it. So the way that I would put it now would be, my experience in every moment is that it's new. Oh, new. And that a new possibility is being realized in every single moment based on the past. And in that sense, to use the term that I use in Soul Story, it's emergent. It's evolutionary emergent. Each new moment emerges from the past. So my basic kind of thesis that I'm seeing if can work is, well, that's what we experience. What if that is the nature of reality? The nature of reality is the realization of ever more emergent possibilities. There is one flow of becoming, well, the time stream. There's one flow of becoming, and everything which has any form to it whatsoever, has any quality to it at all, is all part of this one realization of potentiality in ever more emergent ways. And that's what's got us from the kind of purely informational level of reality that quantum physics is looking at, where it's not even physics, it's not even, doesn't have mass, it's potentialities, it's things you can only understand with mathematics, right the way through the emergence then of the physical domain, from basic atoms and molecules to star systems, and then here, at least in our little corner of the universe, life, and then from life, psyche or soul. The word psyche is just the Greek word for soul. Soul's the German word for psyche, the Germanic word. So there's been this ever evolving emergent process. And what that does for spirituality is it goes, that would mean that all of those things which are traditionally seen as outside aren't. That everything, not just what science studies, but also what spirituality studies, is all part of one process, which is this realization of potentiality in ever more emergent ways.
Yeah, that is a big thing to digest. Good luck with whittling that down.
It's so exciting to me because what I love about it is it's actually so simple. It's a very in that way it's what you know the word I like that philosophers often use is elegant. You know, it's simple, and it encompasses a lot with one simple idea. So the way that my thoughts have gone since what you have looked at, Kevin, has been, okay, so if that's right, then what would be the most simplest quality we can imagine from which everything else has emerged? And I've been using recently an analogy from physics, where one of the great breakthroughs in physics over the last 40, 50 years has been to see particles not as things, but as information within fields. And I think that's a very good way for understanding the very basic forms of reality. So what would be the simplest field that could be informed with information? And the most basic field I is one that exists but has no other qualities. So I just call it being. So then you have a very simple metaphysics, which is, okay, so the field of being has no qualities, but has the potential to take on any quality. It can be informed by information, where information is what distinguishes things from other things within the field. And then you've got the whole of the universe from its simplest beginnings as pure information, as information in the field, arising through these different levels that we can see around us. So from physics to biology to psyche. And then you've got one story. Now, that's an incredibly complex story, and that's just the very beginning. But it is one story. It's not, you know, the scientific story over here, the spiritual story over here, you know, a whole lot of complex things. There's something which exists outside the process of evolution. Why? How did it get there? None of that. You've got something like one elegant flow of the realization of potentiality. And that feels really exciting to me. That would be quite something if we could make that work. And I think we can.
Do you think that as we are evolving as a planet, as a universe, which we are just this little speck physically on, it's curious to me, and I look at other people like you or people that I feel connected with on an ideological, spiritual sort of thing. Like, I know I could have a conversation with Tim before I sent you an email asking. Like, I felt like there was something intuitive knowing that I was not surprised when you said, yes, I'd be happy to. It seemed like that was the thing I should do. And then I look at other people and that are close to me, that are not close to me, and I see them as not so connected with anything. And then I think, but I know I'm connected to them. So how is this possible? How can we be so diametrically opposed in so many different ways as individuals to other individuals, yet we're all the same? Is that the part of us crashing and moving together that is causing the evolution?
The thing which is interesting about the difference between the psyche. And, you know, just to be clear for anyone listening to this, you know, what I mean by the psyche or the soul isn't some fancy theological concept. I mean the thing you're experiencing right now, where you're understanding the meaning of these words. The immaterial realm you experience as images, you go off into it in dreams and have whole worlds created from it, and where you can have visions, where you can have thoughts, where you can imagine talking to yourself, which is what is thinking is. It's like that's what I mean. So in the physical world, in this one, the biological world, you and I are on other sides of the planet, and generally we affect things which are in spatial proximity. Like, I can pick up that cup, but I can't pick up a cup that's on your table. But in the psyche, and anyone can get this just by having a look as I speak, things aren't connected. It's not in space, is it? You know, where is it? in space. It was nowhere. It has its own imaginal space. It's not a spatial or material thing. An idea is not material or spatial. And if you look at ideas, they're connected through meaning or narrative. So a very simple way of, you know, if I say elephant to you, it will connect with all the things that you connect with the word elephant, memories and facts, you know, and also, you know. So we can be very close psyche to psyche to people that we're close to narratively. So you can have, you know, your lover can be on the other side of the world, but you're right up close, actually. And you can have that with people you resonate with, where your ideas resonate. You can be like, no, narratively, we are really close. We're just physically, we're a long way apart. And that's where we connect differently in the psyche. And that ability for psyches to come into collectives where they resonate together is a large part of what creates culture, I think.
Sure, I think.
For sure. I think it for sure creates culture. I guess that is a part of the whole human evolutionary process. And because I think of it, I struggle with the concept of moment zero and the notion that things just started. Started from what?
Yeah.
Well, I can have a go at that for you because I've been working on that for my latest project that I'm doing, and it obviously we're getting it's an extreme thing to try and conceptualize because, like you said, it's like you're trying to, you know, moment zero is the beginning of time. So hang on, what came before it? Well, it's the beginning of time, so nothing came before it. Oh, what does that mean? So first thing I think is to go, well, to be absolutely clear that it looks like our universe had a beginning. Now, that doesn't mean that that was the beginning, of course, because our universe could well have come from another universe, I think. And there are good reasons to think that might be true in physics. So it is possible that our moment zero was a bit like Tim Freake's moment zero. Yeah, I started, but the human race didn't start with me. It started before. So there's that. But even then, if you want to maintain this evolutionary emergent narrative that I've been exploring, you still eventually come back to, hang on, it's getting simpler and simpler and simpler until it starts. So what could that mean? And the image, and this is kind of just a gesture, it's like a poetic gesture in a way. But another thing we've got in quantum physics, which fascinates me, is the idea of what's sometimes called the quantum soup. And if you go down into what looks like emptiness, what you find is quantum particles coming into and out of existence all the time. That's what you find. And I think that might be the clue, so that you can go, if you imagine a field of potentiality, which is always, because that's what it is, a field of potentiality, realizing potentiality, as it were. And if you think of the simplest information for us would be a one or a zero, that you've got that coming into existence, coming out of existence, coming into existence, coming out to, is actually the very nature of potentiality. That's why it's not nothing. It's potentiality coming into existence, coming out of existence. And if you imagine that occasionally, as it were, that coming into existence doesn't go out of existence, then you have the beginnings of a universe. And this is an idea that I'm approaching as a philosopher, but it's also an idea that physicists are playing with in their domain. So that your moment zero is like, it's the moment zero for our universe, but it's not the moment zero. It's the moment zero for our universe. Now, the little bit, I don't know if you can come this far with me, because this is a little bit of this really is a bit of a mind fuck, which is, it really is, which is if each moment, if each piece of information that's coming into existence and coming out of existence, each one of those is in effect a moment zero. Each one of those is the beginning of time, which would mean that they have no temporal relationship with each other. So you couldn't say this one was before this one or after this one or at the same time as this one. They've got no relationship whatsoever. So you're talking about a ground where things are coming into and out of existence, but each one that comes into and out of existence is its own arising of time. And that what's happening is that when things come into existence and stay in existence, you start a process of realizing ever more emergent potential. And who knows what, how many of those there are or could be, or, you know, infinite. But the ours is the real one of those time streams, and that's what's being realized. And it's got as far as this with us.
So does that change your time stream idea? So or does it complement it that there are many time streams?
I think what it's saying is, yeah, it's going, look, that we if that is right, then one should think that there are infinite realizations of potentiality going on, except you couldn't say they're going on at the same time or before or after. You can you couldn't say that because they're not temporally related, but you could say that process that there's something, I don't know, it's probably a very personal thing. I don't know if other people get it or not, but there's a kind of a, I would say, an existential nausea, to use Jean Paul Sartre's kind of phrase, that comes up if I think, you know, it's like if I think existence is a particular way, the nausea comes up because it feels like, well, why that way and not another way? You know, what is that Heidegger's thing? Why this and not that? And it's kind of like, yeah, you know, if there is a God, it's like, well, why? And where, and or if it was done in this way and not that way, it's like, why wasn't it something else? What I love about this thing I'm exploring, which works really well for me, is it goes, the essential nature of reality is the potentiality for anything, which in our instance happens to have become this. But the fundamental nature of what exists, the ground, is the potentiality for anything. And that doesn't give me nausea. I feel like, yeah, that kind of makes sense to me. I don't know why. Yeah, what would exist? Well, the potentiality for anything would exist. That makes sense. And itself has
no makes a lot.
Yeah, I love the idea that everything is possible.
That's the statement. And then it goes, of all those possibilities, it's headed off down a particular road. And that road has led to this. And at this point now, through us, this particular time stream is conscious of itself. There are human beings now getting together on Zoom and just and trying to work out what the hell it is, which is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is pretty amazing. I struggle with so many things because everything seems to screw with my mind the more I think about it. And then some of it just seems to make such perfect sense and flow naturally into how I feel like it should be, instead of sometimes articulating the nature of how you feel about the universe versus how you can express it or can be very daunting task.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is that what we often mean, certainly what people who are into spirituality often mean by the intuition, is the most emergent level of their processing. And so our processing is developing. I mean, fundamentally, I would say that what we are is the one in relationship with itself. That's what everything is. There's one universe, and every single individual system within it, whether it's an atom or a plant or you and me, is in relationship with the whole. And so what's evolving is that relationship. That conjunction of the individual and the universal is what's evolving. And how you process it will govern what you experience or what you can realize. So when you, for any of us, there's levels that we're processing it on that we can only do it sometimes. We have to be in a very emergent state. That's what spiritual awakening is. You suddenly, wow, I'm processing in a whole new way, and wow, this is amazing, and then it's gone because you don't know how to stabilize it yet. Or you've got intuitions. It's like, I've got this feeling. It's like a thought that I don't know what it is, or I can't justify it, but it feels right. And that is the most emergent level of your processing. And sometimes, usually it's right, I think. Often, sometimes it's not. But it's like that's your thing you follow because it's going to open up something new.
Aren't we, in the way I have been thinking lately is, basically corresponds with what you just said, kind of the, I feel like we are living and experiencing this reality so we can learn and grow. And when I mean we, I mean we as the universe. Like we are the eyes and ears and nose and mouth of this planet, which means we are the eyes and ears and see from our little sliver of what we can see and smell. We, in this realm of our reality, we are experiencing that for and on behalf of ourselves in the universe. Like we are the universe, so we're giving ourselves a little slice of all these different Kevins and Tims and all these billions of things to learn from itself.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening. I mean, I think, and I think what we're doing when we're learning is a continuation of what the universe has been doing ever since the beginning. Because I think the universe has been learning. Now, it doesn't, not consciously, because it's not conscious, but it's like more like an AI. You know, the way in which we now have computers that learn.
Oh, I got to stop you, Tim. I have to stop you. Please forgive me. You said the universe is not conscious, but isn't it conscious through us?
Yes, it's conscious when it reaches us. That's when it's conscious. So if you go back 14 billion years, it's not conscious, but it's still learning. It's learning how to be each thing it knows how to be. There's a paper which I'm very interested in by 14 physicists, might be 12 actually, from the US and Canada, I think, called The Autodidactic Universe, which came out when I was working all of this, I think last year. The universe is self-teaching, and the regularities, the so-called laws of nature, aren't laws. They're regularities which have evolved like everything else, because the whole thesis for me is everything has evolved, everything. So the regularities of nature have evolved. The universe has learned how to do matter, and then it learned how to do single cells, and then it learned how to do multi-cells. And now, as you and me, it's learning how to do all sorts of things. It's learned how to do computers and Zoom and all the rest of it, but it's also learned, increasingly, I think, how to enter these deep awake states, the states which were your mystics of Texas, that the mystics have been exploring for some time, but small little groups, but now it's much wider, that people can access these profound states of oneness. And, in you know, because what's happening there? When you recognize, you have that oneness experience, I think what you're seeing is you're recognizing the oneness of being, that the field of being is one. So the isness, as the Zen guys put it, the Zen masters talk about, the being of everything is the same. So you and I are different human beings, but we're the same being. And so everything is being. And then suddenly you're in a very different world. Once you get that, once you step into it, rather than, you know, just thinking about the idea, but you actually perceive with the idea, the whole real world changes, because you're no longer just this little skin bag, as Alan Watts put it, you know.
Put it, you know. Yeah. You're connected with everything.
I love Alan Watts. I had my first kind of really got it, I get it moment, sort of, when thinking about how we are connected, how you and I are connected, how we are all one, was the idea of water, that we are constantly just fluid. And I'm drinking water. It's going out here into our farm, something else drinking the water over here, and the rain comes. We're all just constantly cycling this water. And so if I'm mostly water and, well, space and water, but if I am constantly renewing my water that was just in you the other day, and now it's a part of me, and now it's gone from me, and I have new water from somebody else. It's like, how can we not see that as we are all fluid and flowing together? And there's only this much water. There's never been any more or less water that we know of on the planet. So we're all consuming it and moving it through us. We are one.
Beautiful. It's like we're like inverted fish. The ocean moves through us rather than us in it.
Yes. I think...
Sorry, go on, Kevin.
No. You were wondering what?
I was just wondering as you were speaking. I just thought, I wonder if Julius Caesar ever breathed in these particular molecules before me. Or Abraham Lincoln, or...
Well, sure. I don't know how they couldn't. One thing that, whenever I think I was in eighth grade, and my science teacher said that everything is, and I think this is what maybe sparked these sort of philosophical questions, was this little seed he planted into my mind was... He said something funny to the class, and being, funny, silly, stupid young boys, we likes it sticks in our brain. He said, nothing is new on any of you gentlemen. And he said, the tip of your finger at one time was probably a dinosaur dick. And whenever he said that, I was like, what are you talking about? And then that just starts a whole line of thinking that I'm really grateful that he used such phrasing where it just stuck into my mind forever, because that sort of thing is true. I mean, all these molecules, they're all the same. We're just constantly recycling everything.
Yeah. So what's so going back to your original, the point you made a little moment ago about learning, feels like, yeah, so okay, so the universe has learned how to do all these stuff, and then it's us. And what's different about us? Well, we're conscious. So we're consciously learning, and we can focus our attention on whatever we choose to. So that's why things for us are evolving so quick. Because in the past, all of the learning has been trial and error, very, very slow, lots of disasters. Well, we still have disasters, but now it's really quick. And we can focus, and what are we focusing on? Well, what's happening, I think, is more and more people, as well as a whole array of things that we're doing in culture, are focusing on who the hell are we? And that's leading to these an increased number of these traditionally mystical states of oneness. So that's where my latest work is, around the idea of the univigil, and I've started giving the whole philosophy a new name now, of calling it univigilism, because it leads to this idea of a univigil, I think, and that where a univigil is an individual conscious of unity with the universe. And it enables me to say, look, I think the leading edge now of this evolutionary process that's been going on for 14 billion years almost is we are learning how to be univigils. And when we experience these deep awake states, we are starting the process of becoming a univigil. And it does two things which I like. One is it cuts right across ideas which I don't like in what I would call misanthropic spirituality, anti-human spirituality, which goes, oh no, you've fallen into this, you've got a real nature which is already transcendental, you're lost in illusion, your humanity is a bad thing, stop thinking, that's a bad thing, stop having attachments, that's a bad thing, ideally, you know, escape your body traditionally. And this turns it right around. It goes, no, your individuality, your humanity is the foundation from which you awaken to your unividuality. It's the foundation from which you can come into this more emergent, more evolved state in which you recognize oneness. It's not in the way, it's a foundation.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I have on my notes here how and what is everything you just said, talking about your... I think it's wonderful. I'd love to see specifically you and so many others that are evolving their thinking to make it resonate more, to reach the boundaries of our understanding, and then push and push and push. Is there any specific driving force in your life other than yourself that has made you want to explore all these things?
I think the thing which makes me want to explore all these things, Kevin, is I wake up every damn morning and it's happening. This is happening. And it happened again this morning. I was like, here damn well is this Tim guy. And he's just a bit older and getting, you know, there's an even bigger mystery heading my way called death. It's like, oh, I better pay that some attention. That's coming soon. And I'm, you know, this is happening. And I look at the night sky and it seems to go on forever. And that's pretty weird. And then there's the psyche. And I'm aware, because I had my first awakening when I was very young, when I was about 12. What struck me very early on was, oh, the state that I'm in governs what I experience. It isn't there's me in the universe and I can just work it out. It's not like that. It's more than that. I myself am evolving. So when I come into these more emergent states, the very nature of what I'm trying to understand is different. So if I really want to understand what it is, I have to start cultivating these more awake states, because otherwise I won't understand it at all. I'll just understand the lower levels, where I want to understand the whole thing or as much of it as I can, and experience it as much as I can while I can. And that's what really pushes me. And then with the philosophy, sorry, go on, Kim. I've said enough.
I was just thinking, just for all the people out there that enjoy you so much, but what is the day in life, in the life of Tim, what is it like? Are you contemplating these notions all day, every day? Are there breaks? Are you skipping and writing poetry? What happens?
It's happening a lot of the time. Right now, I'd say it starts at 4 o'clock in the morning when I wake up and I go, damn, I've woken up. I really wish I was asleep. That's the honest truth, because I wake too early and it starts. And honestly, I don't want it to. I just want to go back to sleep. But, you know, sometimes I can, often I can't. This morning I couldn't. So I'll stop for a while, maybe get up, and then I'll go back to sleep again later. But I start early. I'm in my little office now, which is my little cave at the end of the garden, where I spend a lot of my time. And I'll work through on philosophy or walk, often walk, because that really helps me think. And then these days, I will stop in the evening and spend time. My daughter, who's grown up, has just come home from university, so it's special she's here. And I will spend time with her and my wife. But in the past, I would have worked through the night, but not anymore. I just can't do it. I would if I could, honest truth, but I can't. But I also do other things. In particular, I used to be a musician. So I will compose and make music a bit now, which I haven't done for about 20 years, but I started again over lockdown. I started making music again. And I really like that, because there's a quality to thinking which I adore, to do with clarity and ideation. But there's a thing about music which has got no words in it. It's just beauty. And that really appeals in a different way. And if anyone who comes to my events, because the other thing I do is I run retreats, which are experiential. And if you come to one of those, there'll be lots of music, because it has such a powerful effect, the music. So I love doing that.
When are your next events?
So my next event is at New Year. We do one over New Year, and we're about to announce another one in the spring and another one in the autumn. And that's like the experiential foundation of it, where it's like, okay, we've shared all these ideas, but let's actually get it. And the way for me that you know you've got it is when you step into that oneness, there's this enormous love. You may not even notice that it's oneness. You might not even have that idea, because that's a particular way of thinking about it, really. The feeling of I am deeply connected, and the level of beauty as well. One thing I love is that, you know, suddenly you can see a whole group of people go from who are these weirdos to, oh my God, everyone's so beautiful. And that goes back to the thing I was talking about earlier, with that I learned when I was a kid, when I had my first awakening, is you realize, oh, hang on, this is the same world, but I've shifted my psyche, the state of my soul, and now it's a different world. It's the same, but now I'm experiencing it in this much more emergent way, and I'm seeing things about it I would otherwise have missed. And that's, I love sharing that with people.
I think that is beautiful. Well, I'm excited for you and for everyone who attends your events. I think what you just said was right on how we change our own experiences, kind of like what me and my wife Jill were talking about recently in one of our podcasts, was we are and we become what we focus on. It's kind of that's a similar thing. We can change our perceptions about everything. Pretty much. I mean, there's some things maybe that I can't change. You know, if I hit a hammer and squash my thumb, you know, I'm probably not going to. It's going to be the same no matter what my mindset is until the pain subsides. But that is a wonderful thing. Can you explain a little bit about your events? What happens there?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, and some, just so people know, I sometimes do this online. Well, I have an online group, which we also meet up every Sunday in the evening for the UK, so the afternoon for the USA. And we will do philosophy. I'll explore ideas and people will chat and ask questions, but also we'll do experiential things. And the big transition for me with the retreats was about 20 years ago, where I don't know why I even did it. I just suddenly got people meditating on each other. I just got people looking in each other's eyes. I'd never done it with anyone, although people have been doing it forever, of course, but I hadn't, and I'd never come across it really. And what happened was that people had a profound experience. So what will happen at the retreats is I talk, we lead meditations. My wife now will lead embodied meditations as well, so your body's feeling in a good space. And then it will build up to a Saturday night usually, or it'll be New Year's Eve, the next one, actually New Year's Eve. And you'll find yourself sitting down in a beautiful environment, really pretty and magical, with beautiful music, sitting in front of somebody and just looking in their eyes. And looking and realizing, oh, there is another human being, there's another face. And then the big moment, I think, comes was when you realize, oh, hang on, the thing I'm connecting with, the soul, the psyche, I can't see it, but I'm connecting with it. I'm something that can't be seen connecting with something that can't be seen through the looking. That's far out. And you get that, and then in a certain moment you get, oh, this is the universe looking at itself, and there's one of you. So I do that, and then you get up, move along, and then you sit down with somebody else, and then you do it again, and then you do it again, and then you do it again. And very quickly, everyone just melts. And what sounds like at the start, like it must be, oh, that's a bit weird, becomes the most natural, sweet, playful, delicious thing you can possibly imagine. And by the time you've gone around and met everyone, which is what I like to do, in a, you know, say an hour and 20 minutes or something, every single person is usually in that state of communion and in that state of oneness.
What a great way to really melt everyone's energies together.
It really is. It really is. There's a lovely video, you can check it out online, called Deep Connection. We've got some filming of one of the retreats that we did somewhere. It's an it blows me away. I mean, I've done it now all over the world in so many different cultures, different languages. And every single time, without exception, it has gone to this deep place. And every time I do it, it feels fresh, you know, because I may have looked in the eyes of 100 people, but I haven't looked in yours eyes, and I haven't looked in your eyes today. And it's always fresh. It's never like, oh yeah. It's always like, wow, this is the most greatest privilege. And we come into this communion. Now, so this is just to tie it back with the previous philosophy. One of the controversial ideas, which is in the course and which is definitely the end of Soul Story, and which I've been developing a lot, is I want to claim, because I want to say, look, everything which has any quality at all is part of one process of emergence, which is leading from the simplest to the to the most emergent you can imagine. I want to say, look, God exists, or what you could call God. It may be the wrong word, but it's not at the beginning. It's where it's going. It's what's arising from this. It's the universe is flowering into something greater than us. And that experience which you have in the awakened state of feeling like I'm connected with something greater than me, and it's all loving and it's benevolent, and it's that's not there at the beginning. That's what's arising now. And my hunch is that just as all these individual cells got it together somehow to form a communion of cells, which is me, in the same way, when we come into that state of oneness, individual souls form a communion of souls, which is creating something on a higher level. And so what happens, I think, when we come into those what I call the immersion circles, the gazing, and you absolutely dissolve into this deep communion of soul to soul, is I think you are actually experiencing God. And more than that, I think you're contributing to the evolution of God.
Yeah, I think looking at somebody directly in the eyes and sitting and calmly gazing, it's a lot more powerful than just a handshake and passing.
It really is. It really is. And the nice thing about it, what I love, because you can do it with listening as well, you can do it with touch as well. But what I love about all those things, and it's where I've ended up, is I'm interested in things that you can do all the time, or you're already doing. So a lot of the spiritual practices I learned when I was younger, a lot of them were imported from India, and they were all sort of special things to do, or words to say, or... Whereas this is like, you're looking at people all day, every day. Once you learn you can look at people and not see them, or you can look at them and see them. And, you know, obviously you don't want to be like, hello, you know, but it's the intention. It's not the, you know, you don't have to be weird about it. You just see them.
Right.
You just see them. And you can do that in your everyday life. Once you really learned, and then a kind of ripple of kindness just kind of goes out into the world every time you do it.
Yeah, we can. The world definitely needs a lot more ripples of kindness. What other spiritual practices outside of just staring at people do you do on a daily basis?
The other day, every now and again, I work too hard, probably. That's the truth. And I know I need to take a day where I will just stop everything, even eating, but I'll certainly stop everything. And I would used to say, you know, I was meditating. But increasingly, I think what I actually do is I sit still. And that's it. And it's one of the things which I feel that we might be missing in the modern world. And I'm guessing that in history there was an awful lot of sitting around doing nothing, because there wasn't a lot to do in the evenings, you know. But these days, of course, there is a lot to do, and we have light, and the day hasn't got to end. We've got turn on electric lights and all this. Fantastic. But I do think meditating or sitting still is incredibly powerful thing to do, and just paying attention to your soul and seeing what's moving around and what's arising, so that you can self-reflect. the ability to self-reflect, especially deeply, is the way you transform your soul. So if you want to engage with the your personal transformation, that's the way. It's the only way, I think. So I think that's a great thing to do. And then also you can take your attention onto, like in more practice meditation, you can actually, you can, the practice that I'm interested in at the moment is very simple. I would call it focusing and expanding. So what I notice is that whatever I pay attention to, I process that in high definition and it becomes very, very vivid. So if I sat here now and we said, okay, we've been paying attention to each other, so this conversation has been really, really vivid. I haven't been paying attention to my left foot at all. Like it didn't even exist. But now I've thought about it. It does exist. I can feel it. You know, if wherever you put your attention, it's vivid. That's your real superpower. So if I do something like put my attention on breathing, then breathing becomes like, oh my God, breathing. I wasn't even conscious of it 2 minutes ago, but now, God, to breathe is just immense. So that's interesting. And then if you take that and instead of focusing it then on anything in particular, you open it out so that it's focusing on everything universally, that's when you can bring the oneness in, make it very vivid. And then suddenly the oneness, we can do it now, and then suddenly the oneness of everything is like, oh yeah, there it is. It's all the oneness of being becomes very vivid. So that's nice.
I love that. But how do you make that a practical practice in everyday life? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, you can just do it. It's again, I mean, you can do it anytime. I mean, you know, you just, when I was younger, I was a pretty avid meditator. So I would have, you know, wake up in the morning and do my meditation practice. And I had two periods where I pretty much did nothing but meditation for a year. I had the opportunity, I was very lucky, to withdraw and just do that and pay attention, which was fascinating and wonderful. But most people don't have that chance. But you can, I think it's very individual, Kevin. You know, it's like for some people, it's make a space and go, I will do it then. And make it attractive. I started suggesting to people, they because I was teaching this idea of doing deep awake meditations, like the one I've just described. And people were constantly going, I just don't do it. You know, so I said, look, we're going to change the name. This isn't a deep awake meditation. This is a deep awake indulgence. It's like indulge yourself. You know, even if just for 5 minutes, just indulge yourself in the sheer pleasure of existing. Go on, just for you, for 10 minutes. Just sit down, let it all go and just go, oh, I exist. Isn't it great? And see it like that. So it becomes a delight. And then it'll be like, oh, just do another 5 minutes. Oh, go on, let's make it 20. And then you can just the joy of going into these states. That's the way I'd approach it.
I love that. Do you find that whenever, as you walk around, you mentioned earlier that you like to do your best thinking walking, is that you are having your own personal walking indulgence where you are experiencing life in such a way where you're recognizing your breath, you are hearing the sound of your feet as you walk, you're noticing the colors of everything more vibrantly? Because I find myself doing that sometimes. And whenever I recognize now when I don't, I'm like, you know, I stole that moment for myself by drifting off into some worry or concern that I could have otherwise dealt with differently.
Yeah, I mean, walking is a great way to do it. And I think walking is a great place if you want to come into that realization of being the one in relationship with itself. There's something about walking in the countryside which makes that very easy, I find. Because you're kind of walking around inside yourself. You're walking around inside the universe and you can feel that connection with everything around you. And you're right. You see, there's an awful lot made in mystical thought about the problem of thinking and all the rest of it. And I think it's really simple. I think thinking is a fantastic thing. I've really enjoyed doing thinking with you, and I love doing it. Thinking is just imagining talking to yourself. And I like talking to other people, I like talking to myself. However, you can talk a lot of rubbish to other people and to yourself. And if you just talk rubbish to yourself, it's like you might want to shut up. And you know, if you're just going round and round with worries and all the rest of it. So thinking's great. It's just what you how you're thinking that matters. And then when it comes to like a meditation practice, all it's really about is whatever you pay attention to, you will process in high definition. So if you're paying attention to your breath, it will be amazing. But if you get distracted and pay attention to your thinking, you will forget your breath. And if that's not a problem, but it's a shame, like you said, if you're missing out on this beautiful sunset because you're thinking about something you could think about later, or even is not even worth talking about. And really all that's like, it's like being, you know, with your lover watching the sunset and talking all the time. And it's like, shh, no, quiet, just no, shush, just the sunset. And it's that with yourself. It's like, just let it quiet down and just enjoy whatever it is you've decided to focus on. That's it.
I love how you put that. That was wonderful. Just sometimes you just need to be quiet. Like last night, my wife really loves doing this. And we live on a good-sized farm in East Texas, nestled in the piney woods of East Texas. And we have this little fire pit thing that we like to sit around in our outside kitchen. And it is so wonderful. We did it last night. I didn't realize she was over there because I'm up here in my study doing my thing. And then I realized she's out there and I'm in here not living. Like I'm just kind of fiddling with some paperwork. You know, it almost was like, what am I doing? My wife is outside under the stars. It's beautiful. And I'm not there. I'm not living with her right now in this moment. And I felt compelled to let her know I was on my way. And I was really almost anxious whenever I called her to see if she was still over there. And she goes, yes, I am. And I said, well, are you going to be there for a little while? I was so grateful that her answer was, yes, I plan on watching the fire for a while. So, yeah, I get to go live tonight. Let's live and be quiet. And we just sit out there and hardly said a word. So I'm lucky to have such a special woman in my life.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. There's the sitting and doing nothing. You know, it's great, isn't it, to do that from time to time. And doing things is good too, but it's you see something else. And it's a good thing to see.
I think so. But Tim, I'm just really grateful for you that you spent some time talking about your course and all your ideas. It means a whole lot to so many people that helps us consider and contemplate things that some of us have never thought about before. And so I think that you are a great expression of the universe in and of yourself. So thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And it's been a delight. It's always a privilege to share the things that matter with somebody. I feel very, very lucky that I'm able to do that and that people are interested, as I am, in exploring these things.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. And we will wrap that up here. So everybody, you can find Tim, if you wouldn't mind, we'll post and put up your website on the pages. Are there any other places where people can find you?
Yes. Facebook, Twitter. Facebook's probably the better one. But my website, and we have a mailing list. When I send out a newsletter every week or 2 weeks, which includes videos and conversations that I'm having and my latest ideas. And then if people are really interested in kind of getting what I'm saying, this organization, the International Community of Unividuals, which meets every Sunday, is great, and it really is international. I mean, we have people who wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in Australia to be there. It's very moving, and it's not big, so everyone knows each other. You know, it's a nice little group of explorers who get together really to help me develop these ideas and for me to help them understand them. And we have a great, great time together. And it's not like a, you know, not like you'll cost you this or cost you that. It's like, it's donation based. It's like you give whatever you want. I like people to give something, but it can, you know, some people haven't got much. Some people have got much more, because it's all about really those people who want to experience their own individuality, to come into these more emergent states, and who are interested in a philosophy which can support that.
Fantastic. Is that timfreak.com?
All on timfreak.com. That's on the community page in timfreak.com, and lots of the videos are there, and lots on YouTube, of course. And
fantastic. Well, that's where you can find him. And of course, you can find us on the YouTube, BitChute, Rumble, everywhere, Facebook as well. I really appreciate you, Tim, and I appreciate everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time.